Hi there, this is Jasmine. Welcome to the Spring of Life show. How are you tonight, everybody? So I'm here with my co-host, Benjamin, and we'll be talking today about including things and excluding things. I'm sure that, I'll say hello to Benjamin first. Hi, Ben, how are you?
Hey, Jasmine, lovely to be with you on the show tonight again.
Oh, well, thanks for joining me. I always appreciate your company. You're so wonderful, wonderful to speak with. And as always, we invite your participation, anybody that's listening, our conversation topic tonight. And while it's beginning here, we're never really sure where it's going to go. It's kind of like the yellow brick road, is inclusion and exclusion of topics, of emotions, of ideas, of concepts. It's been quite an interesting week for myself. And what I'm going to do is share with you a call-in number right off the top in case you're feeling so called to call us. It's toll-free, 888, that's 888-627-6008. And we're also in a chat room on bbsradio.com as well, and you can chat with us there. Ben is very technologically advanced, and he likes to play with that. Me, I can't find it. Well, anyway, what I would love to speak with y'all about tonight is what's been happening in my world, and I'm wondering if you can relate. This week, there's been lots of topsy-turvy events. I've had a lot of interesting personal things come to light, and what I recognized most about that was that there was something I really, really, really wanted in my life. And like a good steward of self, and having read all the books and written the articles and done the exercises like most of us have, I was really focused on what it was I wanted. I could feel it, I desired it, I saw it, I noticed it around me, which I took as signs of my incoming ship. It was so close to me. And yet somehow I had an inner nagging feeling, this gnawing that at the same time I was welcoming this in, I wanted it so much. And I noticed at the same time, I was also, how can I put this, at war with it. There was a part of me saying that wanting that was wrong, that being that way was not a good thing, that it was troublesome, that it created issues, that it was unworthy, that it was not going to be accepted if I turned into that or received that or acted that way or looked that way. I wouldn't be accepted by others. I would be chastised. I would be kicked out of the tribe, so to speak. That something would happen to me. And it's amazing because it froze me in my tracks. And it was like walking into a lead wall that had several blunt nails as well as sharp ones sticking out of it. And I couldn't quite find my way out of it. And so what did I do? I do what I usually do. I spoke to Ben. And Ben helped me through it. But I had a huge awareness that I was turning my back on a part of myself and my belief system, things that I had been taught and told. And I turned my back on it because I didn't want to face it. I guess, or maybe I didn't even know I didn't want to face it. But I certainly wasn't willing to look at it because I wanted what I wanted, which was the opposite of that. And so if I want what I want and what I don't want is the opposite of it, if I focus on the opposite of it, as we've been taught, how am I possibly going to get what it is that I want? That's a good question. Do you have anything you'd like to add, Ben, so far before I just go on this long diatribe or monologue?
Well, it's very interesting that we all generally want things that we haven't quite gotten yet. And very often that's the case because we find ourselves in a position of the lack of that. And it is to a certain degree then like we are condemning our current situation. Oh, if I only had more money, not having money doesn't feel good to me. And the issue often then becomes that there is such an inner struggle in the direction of wanting money without having an allowing for what currently is here. Just not as much money as we would like to have. And rather than condemning necessarily where we are or just trying to invalidate where we are, and by saying we should be somewhere else, it can oftentimes be very helpful to just allow ourselves to explore a little bit more the ideas around why it's good to be where we're at. Why maybe not having money, or at least more money than we currently have, can be a good thing. And it seems bizarre. Even speaking, it can sometimes feel almost a little artificial. But with the experiences that we've had over the last while, it's been quite amazing to see the power of that. Because when we're actually, or I found, when we've been willing to explore those parts where money's just an easy one, to say, for example, what's really good about not having money? The appreciation of some other abundances. For example, it's so easy to forget about the abundance of air we have, because really the topic of money oftentimes is just a topic of abundance or lack thereof. So if we just focus for a while on the abundance that we already have, we can appreciate that maybe a lack of abundance in the area of money makes us appreciate other things that we have. Maybe it's friends that we actually have in our life. Well, air is just a really easy one to point out. And I think we can all agree that having air is a good thing.
Well, I have to wonder about that one. I mean, judging by the way a lot of people are treating the environment and the lack of concern thereof, or lack of rallying together about our air and our environment and what's going on with perhaps the energies that we're using, maybe that isn't even considered in most people's awareness that air is a good thing to have, or that there's an abundance of it. Although I digress a little bit, perhaps a show on the environmental perspectives and beliefs could be best left for another day. What I will share about my process, to be really, really succinct with people, is that as the past few shows have been about, I've been working a lot on image points. And what I found was I wanted to be that skinny girl. I look around me and I see all these Victoria's Secret ads and these beautiful women, and they're young and they're perky and they're pretty and they're skinny and they look like they can wear whatever they want, and if they wore a burlap sack, they would be great. And so that's fine. And I've been working out and I'm in pretty decent shape. I mean, there's always room for improvement, and clearly in my world, I want improvement. Yet at the same time, as an example, Benjamin and I were out having breakfast a few days ago, and a cute, I call her Blondie at the local diner, a cute little server came to our table, and I just looked her up and down like a hungry wolf, except that I didn't have this lascivious, lusty look that perhaps some people might have in looking at such a pretty young woman. There was a part of me that was hating her and was disgusted by the way she looked. And I could hear this inner dialogue sitting there ordering, having my coffee with Benjamin, planning the day, talking about business. And inside, I have this inner monologue going on about how she shouldn't look that way. That's not correct. And she had a very tight-fitting black shirt on, and she has long blonde hair, and one of her hairs was astray and happened to be sitting on her left breast. And all I could see with my attention and my focus was this young woman's perky left breast covered in this very slinky material. And it was, as she was taking an order, it was, from my perspective, in Benjamin's face, which I didn't appreciate. And I was paying attention to my inner monologue. And later that day, it kept popping up and popping up. And I see these commercials. And of course, everywhere around me, there's all these reminders of all of these quote unquote perfectly shaped women, which clearly I'm not, because that's what that voice is saying. And I had such a personal, well, a little bit of a breakdown, and then such a personal awareness with Ben's coaching that I kept putting these beautiful, sexy, sensual women down, that there was something wrong with it, and I was actually threatened by them. Yet, at the same time, I wanted to be that woman. And for the life of me, until that moment, I couldn't bring myself to admit that that's what I wanted. And so I was caught in an inner war, in an inner battle, two sides of me pulling on the same topic in completely opposite directions. I ask, how could I possibly feel better about myself, which is really what I want, work out without injuring myself, which is what I've been doing, injuring myself because this belief has been running in the background. How am I possibly going to achieve that feeling version of myself, which will eventually translate into the physical so I can see it in the mirror, if I want it so much on one hand, yet on the other hand, think that it's a threat, that it shouldn't be there, and I don't want to be that? It was like living in an insane asylum, bouncing off the rubber rooms of belief systems that simply didn't match up.
And maybe even a little consideration that it was even bad to feel that way, to want something like that, that condemning oneself for even wanting to go there, or and then the ping pong game that we can play, going back and forth in what we want and what we think we shouldn't be thinking, and then essentially lacerating ourselves for these things that really aren't that bad or harmful. I mean, I had a similar situation go through with a good friend of mine, whom has been sending us little messages that were almost conflict-like, or I was going to say warlike. And me on my spiritual path saying that this is behavior that is essentially unacceptable. They were really just little notes around for or against vaccinations. And I felt that he was sort of at some point even attacking Jasmine, and I wanted to defend her when I also noticed that I just had some underlying stuff going on there. And I was going into war with war because I was saying that war was not all right. They're essentially condemning him for going into a place of war, even though I was doing the exact same thing as him. Ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha, ha. Isn't that funny? Joke's on us, isn't it? And I, you know, Ben, it's amazing. I found that this is one of the most powerful, powerful ways of going about self-awareness, self-actualization, living a happier life. Bob's your uncle. Call it whatever you will. Call it spirituality. Oh, I don't know, awareness, consciousness. There's so many words. Just for me, really reclaiming oneself and a really powerful way to stop being imprisoned by these running tapes in the background. I mean, I bet if all of us checked in and pick a bone of contention in your life. Is it the sexy girl at the diner? You know, is it your body image? Is it money? Is it your kids?
Is it the person that keeps annoying you with that one little thing that they do or say? Is it your boss? Is it your coworker?
Is it the toilet seat that's left up or down? I mean, there's so many of them. And we even have cultural overtones and comics and sayings, old wives' tales about them, urban mythologies. But there's, you know, the mother-in-law. Well, we could all back to the mothership. We did that last year. I mean, last year feels like last year. It was last week. What is it? Everybody's got at least one, and my guess is hundreds, but start with that one and notice. I notice the power in listening to yourself rant about how wrong it is, how that shouldn't be, how they shouldn't do that. They shouldn't think that way. They should treat you a different way. How dare they? You deserve better. You deserve more. Who do they think they are? They can't do that. They can't say that. I mean, we can do it on any topic. There is even, Fukushima. We could go to the environment. We can go to vaccinations. By the way, just so you know, I'm pro-choice pretty much across the board on anything and everything. I really love to let people be as they are, except for those skinny, beautiful girls. They can't be the way they are. Well, they can now, but that was quite a load.
So let's see how we turn these particular scenarios around and how anyone can turn this type of pickle around for themselves as well. Because how we worked on this, and Jasmine was so lovely to assist me with this fantastic incoming message from my good old friend that was essentially very much pro-vaccinations. And the funny thing is, for me personally, I actually do believe that there are times when it might be good to be vaccinated. And I might also say that there might be times when it's just not required to be vaccinated, and to be forced into a vaccination might not always be the optimal choice. If I don't feel like taking a vaccination, then I don't want to be forced into it. And there, too, I do believe in the choice, but something was bugging me about that.
It was. You were writhing in your skin. It was great.
Well, I was essentially at war with the idea that this friend was pushing his ideas still onto us, and specifically also impacting me with that. And really what I started examining was, well, I started finding out that he was only able to do this because I hadn't made up my mind. There was actually some part of me that was still unclear about something here. And if I wasn't unclear, then this beloved friend wouldn't be able to move me on this topic. If I was actually so clear on my own choices, on my own ideas, then he can say whatever he wants. I might laugh, I might ignore him, I might agree, whatever it is that I feel up to in the moment, but I wouldn't be so caught with it. I wouldn't be treading the waters of emotional upheaval simply because of a few words that are being said. And the nice thing about recognizing that emotion that grabbed me was that there was more information for me in that. There was actually something coming from the inside that wasn't just a byproduct of what was happening around me, but there was actually like a little friend, a little child that was coming up to me trying to tell me, hey, wait a second, there is something here that is greatly of value to you. Another one of those little golden nuggets. And if you're just willing to open yourself and listen to this wonderful message, then you will be able to discover what lies beyond. You will be able to find what will bring you that peace that you actually long for. And for me, it was the opening myself a little further into my own emotions and recognizing that I was at war with this beloved brother. And that it was actually so funny that I was in a certain sense condemning him for the exact same thing that I was doing. And it upset me that he wasn't really sure about the two different options that there are, pro-vaccinations and against vaccinations. He actually admitted himself that he hadn't done the research to be able to tell, but kept pushing for one side. I felt myself automatically wanting to push in the other direction, but being in the same place where I hadn't done my research in order to really argue for or against either. But when I went deeper, I could already recognize that there may be times when I feel like it, and there may be times when I don't. And being at war with this beloved brother isn't really the way to go. So why don't I just recognize that I'm actually okay where I'm at right now, even if I'm at war with him in the most subtle of ways?
Well, war begins with a thought. All war begins with a thought. How could it begin with anything else? it begins with a thought. And I really appreciate, Benjamin, that you pay attention to your emotions. It's a beautiful, beautiful practice, and it makes you a very beautiful person to be with and be in relationship with in any perspective, from a business perspective, a friendship perspective, a partnership perspective. It's wonderful. But I do have to say that my emotions, I can look at them like little children, and I do, because they are, like you said, they're just trying to get my attention, and you're so gentle with them, and it tends to be that your emotions perhaps are more gentle than mine, because mine I would perhaps describe more as ogres or raging bulls in a china shop. They come through me fast and furious, and they're flaming, and they're throwing fiery spikes at me, and they are burning me and gnawing at me, and they're really telling me that they've got more than a little, they want attention and they want it now. Mine are more like little spoiled army brats with bazookas who are determined to get their way, and they're determined to get my attention now. And you know, it's funny that you said that you noticed you were condemning your friend for that which you were doing yourself. And I applaud you for being willing to turn to take that mirror, because it is true. And that's a really great key. Anything that bothers you about anyone or anything else, that little knot in your solar plexus, you know, we all know that feeling, right? I call it a hook. You're hooked by it. That's giving you something. It's letting you know that you're out of alignment with your highest and best version of yourself. Call it your spirit, call it your soul, call it your Billy, your higher bubble brother, whatever you want to call it. The name matters not really. They're just pointers. But you're out of alignment with yourself, the higher part of you, that loving part of you. Because at the end of the day, when I came to terms with the fact that I was condemning those beautiful women for that which I wanted to be, and let's get real, I realize I'm not a 22-year-old supermodel. So that's not what I want to be. I am a realistic woman. Well, you know, I like to create my reality. I get that as well. And I know the body I've chosen and created. So it wasn't that I wanted that body, but what I wanted was my version of that. And what I wanted was the feeling of it. I wanted to feel better in my body. I wanted to feel that little sex kitten energy. I wanted to feel that when I went to the dressing room at La Senza or Victoria's Secret to try on some lingerie or a new bikini, that I would feel good. And in that feeling good, I see my body differently. It's not that I want to put myself in that woman's body that I perceive as perfect. It's what I believe she has as a result of the way she looks. I think because she looks that way through my eyes, which is perfect, that she must always be feeling how I imagine I would feel. And the ridiculous thing is, I've worked with enough clients, countless clients, many of whom have been that supermodel beautiful. And it always astounded me that there was this most beautiful, beautiful woman in front of me who had these issues, these challenges in their life. I couldn't believe that they would feel unhappy. And so the interesting part there is, even having that experience in my own world of the truth that a person is just a person and they feel the way they feel, it's got nothing to do with the way they look or the size of their bank accounts or the size of their house or their promotion at their job or how well their children are doing in their Ivy League schools. It has nothing to do with that. And even though I knew that within this consciousness, this realm of Jasmine, there was an underlying running tape, a computer virus of self, if you will, that was having me believe otherwise, that was having me think otherwise, that was having my little ogres of emotions give rise. And really, when I really checked into it, it came back from way back when I was a little girl. Because of the way my mother acted. It wasn't good or bad. She certainly did what she could with the resources that she had. and she was in survival mode. She wasn't thriving. She was doing the best she could to keep her head above water. But she certainly used her feminine wiles, we'll say for lack of a better term, to manipulate and to use and to get what it was she felt she needed. And as a young child, I saw that. And I knew that I felt vibrationally there was something wrong with the scenario. And so I did my own little math like a little child would. And from that moment forward, after a series of events, did the math and said, oh, okay, so that's to look that way, to act that way, to dress that way, to be that way is bad, because that means when you do that, you're going to use people and be out of harmony with yourself and manipulate people from a perspective of selfishness to get what you can and toss them away. I'm never going to be like that. Bang! Down came the steel door. And we all do that in our own topics. Could be anger, could be war, could be vaccinations, could be having to be right or in control, or always feeling out of control. So many ways we play that game, or rather, I would say, to be truthful, because we don't know what we know until we know, you know? There's really so many ways that game plays us.
And it's so funny, because whenever we condemn something within another, we believe that we're actually condemning something within them, rightfully so, because being passive aggressive or in such subtle wars is not good for you to do. But funnily enough, what I've noticed more and more is that even though I believe that I'm actually condemning something in someone else, everything that I experience in my own personal reality happens in my own consciousness anyway. So if I start to condemn any aspect within another, I'm actually cutting myself off from the loving energy that I could actually have for myself in that realm as well. Because there is nothing that I've found in all of reality that I don't have within myself in one way or another as well. So as soon as I want to say, this is not good, this is not allowed, this is not acceptable in my reality, it would also mean that I'm cutting a certain part off from my own personal consciousness, from my own personal energy. And at that point, I can feel complete or entirely good anymore. I'm actually cutting myself off from another part of my own love that I could actually experience by saying, this shouldn't be in my reality.
Ah, and so tell me, so I'm sure there are some people out there, I know that there are some people out there who would tell you you're wrong. That there are certain things that are just not right. I use that accent. I don't know why it seems to be coming out. Could be English as well. It doesn't matter. What you're saying is uneducated. Can you prove it? Do you have empirical evidence around that? We know some of those people. What would you say to them? Because, you know, somebody might say, well, harming children is wrong. Whenever I approach this matter with a client or in a workshop, people tend to go to the most fantastical situations. Of course, why not? Examples. What about 9/11? What about children and women being persecuted and raped and beaten? What about what's going on with the oceans? What about big money? What about corporations? Who do you think you are, Benjamin, to just stand there on your soapbox based on spirituality or whatever and tell me that these things are okay to be taking place? Are you saying you condone these things?
I'm not saying I'm condoning anything. I'm not saying that being against anything is really good either. I'm saying that being for things is where it's at, rather than being against things. Because whenever we push against things, we do create more war. We don't actually create movements in the right directions, because if we try to fight pollution, that's a very different approach than when we look to create a very comfortable and joyous environment. And if part of that is cleanup, then that's the direction that we can feel good about and move in the direction of. I'm saying that actually even the fact that we are creating those negative emotions in itself is polluting our bodies.
I have a good example of that, actually, that from an empirical evidence perspective could work. There's a war against drugs, right? We all know about that. In the United States of America, there's a war against drugs, has been for a very long time. And statistically, the drug use and drug issues and incarceration times and money spent in the court systems and recidivism and all of those wonderful things associated with that have risen substantially. I'll use the word dramatically because I like to play with the language. And most interestingly, last year, I think in the, I believe if I correct, recall correctly, it was in the fall of last year, a small country called Portugal, the prime minister of this small country, decided that they would no longer deem drug usage a criminal activity. They were no longer going to use punitive measures to deal with or manage people or situations that were directly related to drug usage, drug trafficking, or anything like that. Any classification of drug, didn't matter what it was. You know, injectables, smokables, poppables, snortables, whatever else they're doing these days, inhalables. They were no longer, they had decriminalized them. And they then decided that they needed a new category. If it wasn't going to be in the criminal system, what was it going to be? And they decided that it was going to be considered a medical issue, a health issue. And within 6 months, their drug issue had dropped by 50%. 50%. And their numbers were quite substantial. And it's been dropping and dropping and dropping. And they've set up clinics. That allowed people to come forward, to come out of the shame, to come out of the shadows, to come out of the guilt, with full awareness that there would be no consequences or repercussions. They could go to a doctor and say, hey, I've got a meth addiction. Hey, I'm using drugs and I want to get off. Can you help me? Hey, I've been selling drugs and I need help. I want to get a job. I want to get clean. I want to be a member of society that and act in a way that I feel good. And it's changed their country. It saved them money. And I think of the countless people who've regained some sense of self, some self-respect, some self-governance. Don't we all feel good when we're contributing something to the world or our families or our friendships or our backyard that we feel proud about? We feel good about it. I've yet to work with a drug addict that feels good about it, but they're also afraid. So that's an interesting application of an inclusive perspective, an inclusive mentality, inclusive actions, rather than, no, you can't do that, and we're going to lock you in jail. You're now bad. There's something wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with them. They might have some misunderstandings emotionally and mentally. They might have had some experiences that have caused them to suffer. It doesn't make them bad. It makes them perhaps human.
Well, and there's also the scientific evidence for the way that our emotional states affect our bodies. Just by the pure fact that we are creating different neurochemicals and different chemical states and hormones within our bodies, we're actually either creating life-affirming chemistry or life-denying chemistry. And that in itself is starting to come more and more into the forefront. If you look at Candace Pert's work, for example.
God bless her.
She had such revolutionary research clearly showing how the body starts to suffer and deteriorate from creating those negative emotions. And if you look at Greg Braden's work, and there are so many others nowadays that are really going in that direction, recognizing that it is so vital and important to become aware of one's own emotions and creating a state within that isn't toxic for oneself. And there it already starts with the thoughts, which then, and beliefs, which create different types of body and physical states.
I get that. And actually, if any of you would like to look further into Candace Pert, she's recently passed away, and she was, for me, very pivotal. Reading her book, The Molecule of Emotion, she was pivotal for me in understanding the physiology of the emotional world, because I had played and worked and studied in the emotional realm for so long. And I wanted to know about how it affected the physiology. And she did groundbreaking, leading-edge work on the cell receptors of the body and how they hook in from the hypothalamus and the emotional uptakes of the proteins and how that works. And also, if you wanted a shorter version, that's far more entertaining, I find. You could watch What the Bleep. What the Bleep Do We Know? And she's in there, and she was also down in the movie Down the Rabbit Hole, which I guess could be the sequence, consider the sequence to that film. And wonderful woman. And Greg Braden and Alan Wolfe and countless, countless, countless people. So the war that we create in our minds, those thoughts that give you that hook, that have you, I have what I call in my right hand, my ring finger of my right hand, I call it my worry finger. And this nail I slammed into a van door, oh, many, many moons ago. And it's split at the cuticle, but it grows out. It's pretty decent. It won't go really long, but it's a fair size nail. But when I start to worry, even if it's, we'll call it unconscious or subconscious, at the subconscious level, I notice it starts going to my mouth and I bite it. And I will bite it down to a stubby, raw knuckle of a finger, which it isn't currently in that shape. I have a Band-Aid on it, so I'm avoiding any further damage to myself. But that, for me, is a real indicator. It's an early warning system, if you will. It's a signal that tells me something is coming up, Jasmine, that is not in alignment with you. You are believing something that is going to give rise. And I've learned to pay attention to it. Of course, this one took a little while to get through, so I really knotted down around this physical image, because I've been really working on image. But every thought we have, hard to monitor, right? I read once that a thought travels at 220 miles per second. That's fast. I wish there were roller coasters that went that fast. Whee! Imagine that. Talk about being slammed back in your seat. But if a thought goes that fast, it's literally impossible to monitor them all. It would be akin to attempting to keep the beat of your own heart. You don't have to. But what does help is pay attention to your emotions. Pay attention to that telltale sign. Do you grind your teeth? Do you bite your nail? Do you suddenly start to tap your foot or shake your leg really fast? Do you get it in your solar plexus? Woof, that, ugh. Do you feel like there's a lump coming up in your chest or your throat? Does the anger just come out of nowhere? Do you get a tick in your face? What's your telltale sign? We all have them. What's yours? Start to pay attention.
For me, it's certainly is a tenseness in my body. I notice that I get rather tense, and I can certainly feel the frustration. And the way that I started turning it around for myself was with my dear friend, that I started noticing that I was starting to become a little passive aggressive and warlike myself. And at that point, I was also, with that type of a turnaround, capable to find the place within myself to have compassion. And once I found that place of compassion, I wasn't only able to have compassion for where I currently was at, but also where my friend was at. And I started noticing that not only was I condemning him, as I said earlier, but I was also at the same time condemning a part of myself, that I could be that way sometimes.
No, not you.
And allowing myself to actually be that way gave me a nice out-breath, some relaxation, some allowance and compassion to just be where I'm at for a moment and to let the dear brother be at where he is. And I found the peace in all of that for myself. I found a place of actually resting and even allowing myself to just not engage in the war anymore and even allow myself to be a little passive aggressive if I wanted to be. And that being okay, it wasn't going to be the end of the world. And actually, not just that, I also saw that it was actually assisting me that this dear brother was being passive aggressive, because I could be confronted with my own passive aggressiveness and find that nugget of compassion.
You
and
know,
with that, actually get the peace that I was longing for so much. Despite what he's doing, I had my own personal peace. And that was exactly the place, again, what I had originally wanted, and got upset because I thought he was taking it away from me. But it was never him. It was me that was starting to be at war with myself and with him at the same time, pointing the finger at him. But whenever I point one finger out, the index finger, there's usually three fingers pointing back at me. And noticing that and finding compassion for it got me all the way back around to what I had been seeking originally. And it was so priceless that this beautiful emotion of upsetness that I had originally felt was that little child that allowed me, when listening to it, to actually gain that deeper wisdom that I was really looking for.
I love that. And I really feel that it's imperative and important that people, I'm going to just say it, I like to consider, I can be pretty blunt and laser-like, that people wake up. People wake up. It's time to stop hitting the snooze button. Your awareness is calling you now. And it's all good and it's all wonderful to receive energy work and to go to psychics, and receive information. But please, please, please do your work. Please seek within. Do yourself a favor. Monitor your emotions. Pay attention to yourself. You have your answers. We can all use coaches. A good coach is, priceless, is a priceless commodity. At the end of the day, we're not baby birds waiting for our mommy to fly in the nest and give it to us. It really is time for us each to step into our own mastery. And speaking of masters, I would love to call in Doug onto our line if he's willing to hang out and play for a few minutes, the last few minutes of our show. Doug, are you there?
Oh, absolutely. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good evening.
Well, good evening.
So, Doug, how do you feel? Do you have any of those naggy little thoughts, or are you willing to share with us what your telltale sign is when you've got something running through you that's got you hooked?
I actually don't have a lot of nagging thoughts. I work too much. I don't know. The only time I think is when it's about business or about doing something that I know I can do something about. Generally, in my past, I had the time to read and think, and I think that's really important because you don't get to know yourself unless you do think about these nagging thoughts. But lately, for the past few years, I haven't had too much time to think about, nagging thoughts.
that's good. I mean, is that good? I don't know. I guess that would be up to the individual or up to you to discern, because there's a way in which I know I've done it myself, or I've hidden myself in, let's say, my writing, or I've gone off on a business tangent and gotten lost in that, or gardening. And it can be quite, we'll call it therapeutic.
Oh,
and at the same time, sometimes I wonder if it can be a distraction. What do you think?
It depends, doesn't it, on the world, on the timing. Your timing. Sometimes, let's take an example. Let's say you've had a spiritual awakening. At that point, your brain's flittering with thought. all this information is coming to you, and then it settles in. And then you're working with what you know versus thinking about it because you're settling in on that information. So I think on some level it depends on where you are, whether you're searching or whether you're not. If there's a if you are searching, there's a reason for that searching. In my life, I'm not really searching anymore for the answers.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. When you have a real awakening, the fundamental questions are answered. And by the way, they're very so simple, like you're connected with everything. I tried to explain mm-hmm. this earlier to a gentleman I was speaking to today, that when you speak to spiritual individuals, they're a little bit more aware of that connection. But to me, even though I hear from people, I'm connected, we're all connected, everything's one, we got to treat everybody equally. You know, if you affect another, you affect yourself. But in many ways, that's, you know, an understanding brought about by information. It's not like me taking a second head, shoving it on your shoulders and saying, live with the physical reality of that understanding. Totally separate than the knowledge part of it. When you have a kundalini, let's say, you get a physical aspect to it. It almost ingrains itself like a third leg. Now, how do you walk with three legs? I walk with two, but now walk with three. So that simple question was answered for me. And I don't need to ponder it. I don't need to ponder life after death or worry about the existence later or the meaning of it all. And believe me, I did up until that event occurred for me. So I guess in that way, I'm blessed.
I get that. Me too. And although I may not be searching for those kinds of questions. In my live stream, I'm fully aware, perhaps it's because of the kind of work that I do, but I am aware that every once in a while, there is that nagging emotional pull. There is something that just doesn't feel right. And I'm really not, you know, I love that you spoke about the mental knowledge of we are one, we are connected. And yeah, easy words to speak. And like you said, when one has an experience of it, it becomes organic. Mm-hmm. There is that awareness. Mm-hmm. And I do feel that as being people and having a body and living on a planet and interacting with others, that regardless of our stations in life or regardless of where we're at on our path, there will always be something that knocks on our door, that wants our attention, that wants to be rectified for a better, fuller, greater experience of life. And I think that as we awaken, it's less about the thought process and more about how we feel about something, because then we know when we're in alignment and we're vibrating with who we are and when we're not. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes I find it's easy to get back in the alignment horse. Oh yeah, that was good. But sometimes I found there's still sometimes those foundational issues, you know, those little core things. Oh, I love that.
It's like a ladder going up to infinity. And if this life, well, imagine a ladder going up and we're trying to reach just the ladder part above us, just one rung above us. Well, if let's say the most wise could only reach one ladder above us in this lifetime, now imagine it goes to infinity. So you're right. I believe there will always be those questions, and that's the fun part of it. But I do caution people in this regard. They don't, you know, if you don't spend time seeking out those answers, they're not going to come, and they don't come immediately. Like, for example, meditation does allow you to open up doors. It allows you to investigate yourself, and it allows you also to harness some of the understandings that you might not think you have in time. Like, for example, if you imagine light and you imagine it for long enough, you can see light almost at any time by closing your eyes. It's like practice makes perfect. Well, if you take the time to practice with yourself, answering these questions, reflecting on the answers, feeling how it makes you feel, you will open up doors, And you will open up more and more and more the more time you spend doing that. It's just, you know, people aren't willing to spend that sort of time. It's like going to a class and figuring you'll know it all the first day. It's just not going to happen. And maybe it will. Maybe it will. Maybe I'm wrong. But I just don't see the teacher showing up unless you're showing up to be in the classroom constantly. And I think the mind and the spirit for all of us needs that attention. We really do. But we got to give it that attention.
Well, it's so lovely because it essentially becomes, as you said, an infinite journey. It is already an infinite journey since we're already infinite souls just inhabiting these lovely bodies, having this great opportunity to play with all this stuff around us. Mm. And the nice thing about it is that when we have cleared out those bottom rungs of the ladder and we've actually dared to climb a little higher, there, yes, will be more and more and more, but the view gets better and better and yes. better. And at some point, you just don't have to deal with the bottom rungs anymore because you've just passed by them. But the funny thing is that people that don't concern themselves with the ladder itself or the rungs, they never even get an idea for how lovely it can be on the top rungs.
I believe that wholeheartedly. Yeah.
What a view. What a ride. Boy, you can take a ride and you don't even have to leave the farm. Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, we all have the desire for more. It just always continues. There's always that journey into the beyond and the beyond and the beyond. Otherwise, I'm sure we wouldn't experience the next day. We'd just be out of here because we do have the power to go anywhere, do anything that we want. But the question is, from the larger part of us, is that really what we want? Or do we actually want to have the experience that this part of us is having right here, right now?
Training that, acknowledging those experiences, training those experiences, I always liken it to, let's say, a boy, he loses his sight, or a girl loses their sight, and then over time learns to adapt to sound. So they start hitting a board or hitting a wall, and that sound vibrates off the wall and hits into their head. Now, almost like sonar, they can read the path in front of them. They no longer really need the sight because the sound kind of makes up for that sight, but that takes time. You know, it's the same with learning the skills in the head. You got to play with what's in there or spend time with your feelings in order to push them to this out there. Even your feelings need that. That's important. It just doesn't. I've never known it to happen. I guess if you were hit over the head and you woke up, maybe you were changed and it happened all at once. But I almost think that at some level, you need some foundation in order for that to occur. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. But that's how it worked for me. And I see human beings evolving by spending time with that part of themselves that they're trying to evolve.
That's so fascinating. Fascinating. Have you heard of morphogenic fields?
I have heard the term, yes.
The idea behind it is similar to the 100th monkey syndrome.
Ah.
And it's actually similar with us humans as well. So the idea behind that is that there were monkeys in the area of somewhere in Asia. They were along a strip of many different islands, and they used to throw, I believe it was fruit, into the sand, and the monkeys didn't like the sand. So they, at some point, learned to wash off the sand, but it, with more and more monkeys seeing to do this, all of a sudden, all of them adopted it. And not just that, the monkeys on solid land, not just on the island, started adopting it as well.
I think
meaning
it was the
that
yam.
As more and more people become more and more adept at these skills, other people will pick up on them much quicker as well.
That's
whether they're actually aware of them by being told or watching it or not, it goes into the field and we pick it up. Isn't that wonderful?
We can download the information just
totally
like with
agree.
The internet.
Totally agree. That's why they say a master need do nothing but stand on a mountain, and affects a lot of people.
That's right. Oh, it's been wonderful having you join us on the show. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure, Doug. And thank you to people who've been listening. We always appreciate that. And I appreciate you, Benjamin, for being a co-host. And to all of our listeners, and I feel that are we getting very close to timing out, Doug, or am I off?
You still have a couple more minutes, yeah.
Oh, I do. Isn't that fabulous? Mm-hmm. You know what's really interesting, I notice? Every clock in my house or one around me says a different time. I have 9 o'clock. I have, 5 minutes. Well, my time, I'm in Eastern time. I have 9 o'clock. I have 5:02. I have 4 minutes to, I don't understand what's going on. Even my cell phone's a little bit off. I guess I'm just timeless, like an Oil of Olay commercial.
You are indeed guessing. Very pretty.
I'm hurt. Thank you.
I text this draw come out there.
Oh, I like that. Morphogenic field. So you know what the good thing about that is? I'm glad you shared that, Ben, is that as we individually pay attention to ourselves, as Doug said, we stay with our emotions, we check in with ourselves, we check in with our thoughts, we look at our beliefs, we ask ourselves if we're feeling good, if we're moving in the direction of our highest excitement, if we're coming at it from a place of real joy. When we do that, it affects everybody. Heart math, we're literally in each other's electromagnetic fields. So be the person that you want to be around.
And have yourself another lovely week. Enjoy yourselves and come visit us on theacademyoflife.com.
Yay, come visit us. Thank you, Doug.
My sincere pleasure. Thank you both. Such great spiritual energy and vibes that you both give off. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Have a beautiful week, and we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
All the best to you. Bye-bye.